Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
How were the last couple of weeks for you? If you check me out on Instagram, you had a sense that mine went pretty well. Mine were pretty decent. Actually, better than decent, but not nearly as much as an adventure as Antonio Brown's. My man, have yourself a summer. How's business? Business is freaking booming.
Business is booming, my brother.
Business is booming, my brother. This has been the year of Antonio Brown, except for all the wrong reasons. There were all the embarrassing and desperate stunts that he pulled to get people to look at him, or to force his way out of Pittsburgh, or both. You know, going on that singing competition, live streaming from his cardio sessions, self-glossing with one of the most idiotic names ever, getting into Twitter beefs with former teammates. And that list goes on and on and on. But I said from the start, there was no way he could keep it up all offseason. Well, it does take a very big man to admit when he's wrong. And I've got to admit, I was wrong. Incredibly wrong. Because not only has he kept it going, he's taken it right into overdrive. There is so much to this Antonio Brown circus. In the past 2 weeks alone, I'm not sure I can fully recap this in a single segment or even one show. So let me pick my spots. Let me start with the pics on Instagram of his feet. At least I think those were his feet, because I have never seen anything like that before. Look, I know a lot of athletes have jacked up feet. Receivers spend so much time running and cutting and jumping that their feet are going to take a beating. But no pair of feet have ever looked like that before. Ever. My man, hit that with some lotion. In fact, hit up Jerry Rice. I love Jerry Rice. One of the things I love most about Jerry Rice is one time I interviewed him on TV, but before the cameras rolled, he said he had to lotion up his feet. And he did. True story. My man was rocking some sandals, took them off, asked for some lotion, and he lotioned up his feet. AB, hit him up. He is one of the few guys who was a better receiver than you, and clearly he had a better plan for his feet than you. And if you're not going to do that, at least hit that with some foot Nivea. Or go to one of those places where you stick your feet in water, and the tiny little fish come over and they nibble off your dead skin. Antonio Brown's feet would be like an old country buffet for those little fish. I mean, are we even sure that those were actually his feet and not some kind of prop or something? Because they look like loaves of bread fresh out of the oven with the crust cracking perfectly. Except it's not crust, it's skin. And it's not cracking perfectly. It's full layers of skin coming off his feet. The only thing better than the hideousness of his feet is the alleged reason behind it. Frostbite. In July. In France. There is only one person on this planet who could get frostbite in July in France. And that person is Antonio Brown. And if the frostbite weren't good enough, it's because he allegedly got it going into a cryo chamber without the appropriate footwear. I mean, if that's true, that is about the dumbest thing ever. Cryo chambers can get down to negative 170 degrees, even colder than that. You go into them wearing gloves and foot coverings for a reason. And that reason is Antonio Brown's feet. Only Antonio Brown could approach a cryo chamber in France and say, man, I don't need to cover my feet properly. I wonder if he went with some, like, Evel Knievel blast, like, yo, you know who the hell I am?
You know who the hell I am?
You know who the hell these feet are attached to? It's going to be a negative 170? Psst, please.
Please.
Man, I played my football in Pittsburgh. You want to see badass? Watch this. I mean, are you kidding me about this, AB? What the hell are you thinking? You imagine this dude trying to run routes without his feet? I'm guessing he's not going to get the separation that he's accustomed to getting without feet. As good as he is at running that go route, he's not running it without feet. I mean, what is this guy doing? His feet are right next to his hands when it comes to being his moneymakers. I'd be really careful with those things. Luckily, he still has feet, or what's left of them, but he also has frostbite. And again, I can't stress this enough, Antonio Brown has frostbite from the summer, and it's keeping him from practicing with the team. Or is it? Because there is another story with AB, one that might actually be even dumber and even more ridiculous than getting frostbite in the summer in France. And it was detailed by Mike Silver in an all-time great Twitter thread, a thread that goes about 20 tweets deep. I can't read all of it, but here are a few highlights really quickly, starting with the first tweet. Quote, even before suffering bizarre injuries to his feet, Antonio Brown alarmed Raiders coaches and teammates by railing against the NFL's enhanced enforcement of helmet regulations, a policy change which will likely force the star receiver to switch to a new model. And then there was this tweet, quote, Brown initially left to seek an additional medical opinion on his frostbitten feet. Before leaving, he pushed back for a third time against the league's prohibition of the helmet model that he has worn for his entire 9-year career. Listen, about the helmet, about that thing. Playing in the NFL is violent. It's dangerous. Every guy should get as much money as he possibly can. Every player should do whatever they can within the rules to feel safe and comfortable. All right? I really don't even want to get into the details of the NFL and the NFLPA's rules about helmets and what they can and can't be used for. So I've got my own simple rule, a very simple rule, just one rule. If you get frostbite in the summer, you cannot argue about the helmets. That's it. There's your rule. If it's summer and you get frostbite on your feet, you cannot talk about what goes on your head. By showing me those jacked up feet, you're telling me you have no idea what you're talking about when it comes to safety. Hell, I don't care if Albert Einstein walked into the Raiders practice facility tomorrow to talk helmet safety. If Albert showed up with frostbitten feet, I'm not listening. Wait, but there's more. Silver's Twitter thread also read, and this is the 13th tweet, an important one. Quote, however, sometime in the next couple of weeks, Brown once again tried to take the field with his old helmet, which he had since repainted with colors approximating, but not completely mimicking the Raiders silver and black design. So my guy showed up wearing his old helmet, but he tried to paint it to look like a Raiders helmet, which is about the most amazing Antonio Brown thing ever. The guy went home. And either he or somebody he knows took the helmet, got some silver and black poster paint, and tried to paint it up and fool everybody like nobody was going to know. They treated the NFL helmet, you know, the thing that is supposed to protect your skull from repeated blows, from brain trauma, that thing. And they treated it like a sixth grade art project. Man, that is so awesome. May as well just show up wearing a Home Depot bucket on your head and spray paint that thing silver. Like I said, I can do an entire program on this topic alone, especially since I was off for 2 weeks. But to button it up right here, at least bottom line it right here, is there anybody anywhere surprised that Mr. Big Chest is pulling this crap? You shouldn't be. Most of all, the Raiders should not be. There's a reason Pittsburgh got rid of this guy. And there's a reason the Raiders got him on the cheap. In fact, lots of reasons. Again, this is the same guy who abandoned his teammates with a game left in the regular season while they were still in the playoff hunt. The same guy who bleached his facial lettuce blonde. The same guy who self-glossed. And of course, not only self-glossed, but self-glossed Mr. Big Chest.
Mr. Big Chest.
The same guy who lost his bleep when he was not named team MVP. The same guy who forced his way out of town. The same guy who lit the organization on fire on the way out the door. An organization that had pretty much always done right by him. So, of course, none of this is a surprise. This is who this guy is. Maybe not who he's always been, but this is who he is now. This is who he is. This is where he lives. This is what he does. And this is what you get when you bring him in. And the Raiders had to know that when they brought him in. And if they didn't, they should have. Because he's been pulling this crap for a while now. Mr. Big Chest.
Mr. Big Chest.
Prepare for summer road trips. Before you head out, make sure you visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you hit the road will ensure a safe journey during the summer months ahead. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. James Jones is my guest. James, good to have you back. How are you?
What's going on, buddy, man? Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you. Let me start with the Raiders camp. You were there, and there are a number of training camp storylines we can get into. You had a conversation with Antonio Brown. Hard Knocks was there for that. Cameras followed you everywhere. What was the vibe like in Raiders camp when you were there?
Oh, man, the vibe is good, man. It's crazy because as I was sitting there, they had our little NFL Network booth set up to where you, right when the players walk in the gate, you know, you kind of see everybody and see who they got on their squad, see how they're looking. And I did not realize the Raiders had that much talent. I mean, all these guys that was walking through the gate, I'm like, my goodness, they signed him. They got him. They got him. And oh, my gosh. So they have a lot of talent. I mean, you can tell that they feel it's different around there. It's year two in Gruden's system. Their car is a whole lot more comfortable. And they just believe that they could go win this whole thing if things plan out the right way, obviously, if they could stay healthy. But they have a lot of guys on that team that has played a lot of football, made a lot of plays, and then they have a very good bunch of young rookies.
James Jones joining us. And, of course, they've got the Antonio Brown situation, which I'll get to in a minute. But you mentioned Derek Carr. On Hard Knocks, you were telling the story about when you were with the Raiders and Derek Carr first arrived, you had dubbed him Baby A-Rodge when he was in that quarterback battle with Matt Schaub. What do you remember about seeing him as a rookie and how he showed up in the preseason?
Man, when Derek Carr first even just hit the field, man, it was just, you could tell like he'd been there before. And the reason why I call him Baby A-Rod is, I only played with two quarterbacks before I seen Derek Carr, and that was Brett Favre and that was Aaron Rodgers. And when I got to Oakland, a lot of the same throws that I seen Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers make, I was seeing this kid make. Down the seam, back shoulders, you know, looking guys off this way, you know, throwing a slant backside, you know, rolling out of the pocket, making crazy throws on the run. I'm like, man, I've seen this before, man. I'm like, dude, this kid is Baby A-Rod. Like, he is going to be special, you know. And obviously the world didn't know, but I'm like, man, I've seen these throws made over and over again, and he's making them look just like they were making them look. So I gave him Baby A-Rod because he was just special, man, slinging the ball all over the field. And so I was just out there having a conversation with AB and just basically let him know what I seen as a rookie. He's a special kid.
We're talking to James Jones. All right, so what about that conversation with AB? What's your sense of what AB thinks about Carr?
Oh, he loves him, man. He's excited. He can't get enough of just how fast he gets the ball out of his hands, how accurate he is with the ball. You know, when I was sitting over there talking to him before practice even starts, he's just like, man, dude, the ball comes out so fast. He's getting me the ball in my hands extremely fast where I'm able to make plays with my legs, yards after catch. He couldn't talk enough about, you know, how Derek Carr was as a man and how their friendship was and, you know, just how close they were and things like that. And when I left the conversation, I was even talking to MJ Acosta, and I was just saying that this relationship that Derek Carr and AB has, I really cannot see anything happening on the field where he's unhappy about how he's used in the offense just because strictly of how their relationship is.
So it sounds great in theory, right? And it might be great, James Jones, my guest. But then you see these pics of AB's feet on Instagram. I mean, when you saw that, first of all, did you think that was real? What was your reaction?
Man, you just took the words right out of my mouth. When I first saw that picture, I absolutely 100% did not think that was real. I'm like, man, somebody done Photoshop, somebody, you know, that cannot be his feet. Because I'm going off of how hard he works, how hard he trains. I've seen him at practice. Even when his feet was like that, he practiced 2 days. And I'm like, I played your position. We barely could plant and run and cut with one blister on the bottom of our foot. You know, it's hard for us. Like, I mean, as a receiver, we need our feet. And I'm like, there's no way he was out there practicing and running on his feet if they were like that. I always claim to be tough when I play in the National Football League, fight through any injuries, don't miss no games. But I'm like, if that was my feet, there's no way I was playing or practicing. And he went out there for two practices with his feet like that. If that picture was real, I still don't believe it's real. Everybody's telling me it's real. I don't believe it's real. But, I mean, he is an animal if he went out there and practiced with his feet like that. And then again, I'm looking at his feet like, man, how does that heal? How do you cure that?
Well, and how did it happen, right? I mean, there are reports that he got frostbite by going for cryotherapy without the proper foot protection. Now, you've talked about doing cryo in the past. For those who don't know, what is that treatment like? And is there any way you would go in there without the proper foot protection?
I wouldn't know. I mean, I've been in the cryo machine plenty of times. And, I mean, it gets to, negative something, within 3 minutes. I mean, and that's the max that you can sit in this cryo machine is for 3 minutes. Now, we all know we all have done something so many times, and then you get so comfortable with it, and you're like, shoot, I don't got to put that on. Just let me jump in there for 3 minutes and get out. You know what I'm saying? So if that was the case with AB, if that's how his feet got messed up, that's how I'm assuming it happened. I'm assuming he's been in this machine 100 times. He probably was in a rush this time, and he's like, man, come on, I got to hurry up and get in before I get up out of here, and then jumped in there and then didn't realize that he really did need the shoes and the socks that you need to put on in there, and it got a hold of his feet a little bit, and he ended up like that.
James Jones joining us, dude. I mean, that's a wild thought. I think you're right. That makes sense. I could see that if that happened, that's how that happened. But then you've got the helmet situation. Guys are really careful and really particular about their helmets. I get that. You wore the same helmet for 7 straight years in Green Bay. They tried to talk you out of it, but you kept it. But then you went to Oakland, and they told you you had to have a new helmet, and you had to make that switch. In your opinion, is there any way that Antonio Brown would retire because he can't wear the helmet he wants to wear?
First off, heck no.
Right.
Never, man. No chance. I mean, you're talking about you got $11 million sign-up bonus. You got $31 million in other guaranteed monies. If you play a game in the Oakland Raider uniform or play a season in the Oakland Raider, there's no way that a helmet is worth $40 million. I mean, I don't care who you are. I don't care how much money you got. There's no way that you're going to stop playing a game you love for a helmet and give up $40 million. So I'm saying he's definitely going to be in a Raiders uniform playing a football game. In a new helmet. I mean, I can see, if they, were making only him change it, but every receiver in the National Football League, not only that, every player in the National Football League has to change their helmet, has changed their helmet. Listen, like I said, I agree with him of the struggles that it's going to be, especially if he's been practicing in a helmet, and he doesn't like it. Maybe it's, messing the way he plays up. Because he doesn't like the helmet. It's bigger than the one he has. Because, I mean, trust me, all receivers love that air helmet that Antonio Brown has. It's the best helmet ever made. But it's the rules. Do you like them? No. But it's the rules, and you got to go out there, put a different helmet on, and go out there and play for your brother.
We're talking to James Jones. All right, one more thought before you go. You've mentioned, or you've been with some other camps. I know you spoke to Aaron Rodgers, and you pointed out that he played 13 years in the same offense, and now it's changing. It's hard to believe that it's been that long. How different do you think that offense is going to be this year, and how do you think he's going to do in that new offense?
Oh, man, we could be looking at a bounce-back MVP season from Aaron Rodgers. This offense is going to be very dangerous, and the most dangerous part about it is a lot of movement, a lot of motions, a lot of guys that they're putting in spots to really take advantage of the coverage and then moving them all around. So a lot of people wants to talk about, oh, man, and the audibles and what is, LaFleur Rodgers going to do with these audibles. He's really not going to have to even audible that much unless it's a 2-minute drive and, really he's calling the plays, But other than that, with all the movement that's in this offense, it forces the defense to communicate. It forces the defense to audible. And he's always going to have a hot route. He's always going to have a check down. And he's always going to have a lot of off coverage because the offense is doing a lot of movement. It's going to be tough to play them man-to-man. So it's really not going to be a lot of checks that need to be made. I'm excited for him because coming from a system with Mike McCarthy for 13 years, it wasn't a lot of movement. We had a lot of talent around him. So it was, line up and play were better than you. Now it's a lot of scheming. It's a lot of movement, getting a lot of these receivers with off coverage from the DBs, a lot of tight formation. So this offense is going to be exciting, and I think you're going to see MVP season from Aaron Rodgers.
Hey, James, last thought. What about the defense? You made the point that when he's had a top 10 defense, he won a Super Bowl. How good does that Green Bay defense look to you right now?
This defense, man, has all the potential to be a top 10 defense. And from across the board, this defense, especially on that D-line, is big. And they are tall, they are long, they are big, they are coming after you. But the best thing about this defense is there's a lot of depth from across the board. On the D-line, in the secondary, they have a lot of guys that they can move around and just continue to just have that depth. And when we had our best teams, we were deep from top to bottom. If somebody got hurt, we didn't lose a beat. And that's what this Packers team reminds me of, especially even on defense, man. They got a lot of guys that can really play some ball. Cornerback position is stacked. Two very good safeties that can cover and hit you. You know, D linemen that, man, if they get their hands up there, really ain't no way the quarterback's seeing over them and they putting pressure on you. So this Green Bay Packers team has an opportunity to make a lot of noise, and it all starts on that defensive side of the ball.
Let me talk to you about one of my favorite products ever, and I will do so by asking a question. Why does Men's Health call the Peloton bike the best cardio machine on the planet? Why? Because it is. Let's break it down. Say you can't find a workout that keeps you engaged? No problem. Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. I've had my Peloton for a few years now. Let me tell you something. That Peloton has paid for itself. I love it. It's addictive. The workouts are great. It's convenient. It's right there in my house. And again, no commute, no reservations, thousands of rides that you can take live or on demand anytime you want, all for less than the cost of a studio class. And right now, Peloton is offering a limited time offer. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike. Get an incredible cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com. That's onepeloton.com and use the promo code Rome to get started. I bought my Peloton before they became a sponsor here. I absolutely love this product. You will too. The reason I take so much vacation is I get so much vacation. And if I don't take it, if I don't use it, I lose it. So that's what I did. Now, normally by the time the middle of summer rolls around, you need a break from me. I need a break from you. The time apart is always good for both of us. I'd even argue on some level, it brings us closer together. And then once those 2 weeks are up, we always have a better appreciation for one another. That is until I read the first really stupid email or I see the first moronic tweet. But overall, it's a very good thing. Now, if you checked out my Instagram feed, you know that we hit Croatia first. I'd never been there before. I'd always heard amazing things about Croatia, like best place ever. Had never been. Did that for a week. We started in Split, Croatia, which honestly, if I'm being real with you, was not the best place ever. It was cool. It was fun. But then we moved on to Dubrovnik, which was definitely better. Then we spent a single night in Naples, before we moved on to the island of Capri. So if you follow me on Instagram or you made your way over there, you saw some of the pics from the vacay. If you didn't, you should go check it out right now. You can see where we went, what we did, what we saw, what we ate, what we drank. You know, that kind of thing. Now, I can't lie. I'm still a tiny bit jacked up by the jet lag. To give you an idea, Saturday morning, we had a wake-up call at 3 a.m. Got up at 3 a.m., to catch a 4 a.m. boat to the airport. And then we catch a plane and we fly through Frankfurt. Then we connect on an 11-hour flight back to L.A. So imagine flying all day and then getting home at 1:15 p.m. It was just kind of weird, right? Just weird. So that was no surprise that I was at my desk this morning at 3 a.m. jamming. Because I'm still kind of jacked up from the jet lag. But as jacked up as that is, and you clones will like this, that's nothing compared to me going all-time bonehead, getting onto the plane 2 weeks back. True story. Now listen, you know that feeling that when you've gone about as hard as you possibly can heading into a vacation, you bust out, you sit down in your seat, and you just wait for the flight attendant to roll on by and ask you, what would you like to drink? That was me. And man, I'm not going to lie, it felt awesome. It felt awesome. I dropped down that seat, just waiting for the magic question. What can I get you to drink? I don't know. How much Bombay Sapphire do you have? Couldn't wait. In all my glory, I'm just sitting there. I'm waiting, thinking about what I want to drink. And then all of a sudden, I go to check something on my laptop. And, you know, for the record, a relatively new laptop. A specced out, maxed out MacBook Pro. Man, this bitch is nice. It's a Ferrari. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm proud of that computer. Man, I love that computer. I am proud of that computer. I threw down. I saved up for that thing. I knew 2019 was going to be a big year for that type of thing. Hell yeah. That was my big swing. That was my big swing for 2019. That new laptop. Specced out. Like specs that I don't even need. Specs that I wouldn't even know if I didn't have them. But man, I wanted that thing. I'd been eyeing that thing. I wanted that thing. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm waiting for the flight attendant to come by. Waiting for some nuts. But I'm just going to reach in and pull that bad boy out. Take a look at something. I mean, it is an 11-hour flight, right? No way I'm getting on an 11-hour flight without that bad boy in my bag. I don't pack that thing. Reach into my briefcase. Panic sets in. It's not there. The mother of all laptops is not in my briefcase. Not only that, the door is closed. The door is closed. It's bolted. They're pulling away from the gate. And it flashes right through my mind. No! I freaking left it at security. Everything else somehow made it back onto my person. My belt, my shoes, my passport, my boarding pass, my watch, my wallet, freaking everything, but not that new top-of-the-line MacBook Pro. You think that me dropping that Euro-spec iPhone in the lake in Wisconsin was bad? Multiply it by 1,000. And I just sat there on the airplane, and we're rolling away from the gate now to the runway. I just sat there, and I'm thinking, this is not happening. This is, oh my God, this is not happening.
Oh my God, this is not happening.
So now I'm thinking, I'm no longer excited to be asked, what would you like to drink? I need that drink badly. So I'll tell you what I do. I'll be honest. I'm like, hey, man. Whatever you do, don't be the idiot who wrecks the next 11 hours. Don't be the idiot who wrecks the next 2 hours or 1 hour. Man, you better own that dope. You did it. I literally did not get that thing back in my bag. So what I do is, as long as we're being real, as soon as we're up in the air, I immediately go on my phone and I start looking for Apple resellers in Croatia. That's how much of a degenerate I am. That's how sick I am. Apple resellers in Croatia. I mean, yeah, I could go 11 hours without a laptop on a flight. Hey, believe me, the way I started hitting the bottom when that went down, I was going to be out in an hour anyway. No way I was going 2 weeks without a computer, right?
2 weeks.
You bet your ass I got one. I found a Croatian reseller. I got a laptop, except it's not the same laptop that we use. It's got a Croatian keyboard, Croatian keys. Man, it was making me crazy. And yes, I found myself a US keyboard and I installed it. It's still kicking my ass. There's certain keys that I can't figure out. I've been working this thing for 2 weeks now and I still can't figure out how to work the question mark key. I still can't figure out the quotes. I've been battling this thing. In the meantime, there's one other little side story going on that's pretty amusing. So, and I know you clones. Hey, genius, did you go to the Lost and Found of LAX? Yeah, I didn't think of that, did I? Of course I went to the Lost and Found. There's an online Lost and Found for LAX. However, they do not post Lost. Can you imagine what that Lost and Found online looks like? Every idiot who's lost a sock? or a computer. Everything. There's thousands of items. And they don't post your item for like 96 hours. So here I am in Croatia, like a total bonehead, like refresh. And it's not showing up. Finally, after a week, there it is in all its glory, the Jim Rome Lapper. And they're like, if it's your item, claim it. Answer a few questions. So I'm like, hell yeah, it's my item. Here's the serial number. Here's the password. Here's the black sleeve that it was in. And I claim it, and I'm still waiting. And they're really good about saying to you, hey, don't file another claim. Or just push back to the end of the line. And, you know, people love killing LAX. Like, it's the worst place ever. I'm not here to do that at all. I'm here to say this. I will own this. This was my fault. I was the one who forgot it. I went bonehead. All right? All on me. Period. I'm not going to qualify it. All on me. Way to beat. 1-1000, 2-1000. However, anytime y'all want to tell me how to get my lapper back, that would be awesome.
Give me back my
laptop.
Give me back my
laptop.
Give me back my
laptop. In the meantime, is there anybody listening or anybody watching in the market for a lightly used MacBook Pro 15 touch bar with a badass Croatian keyboard? I did that. Dude, man, I it was a bad feeling when I realized I dropped my phone in Cranberry Lake. As you can tell, I'm an idiot for gadgets. Like, aside from the things that matter, those are the only things that matter to me. The laptop and the phone. And in like almost successive weeks, I dropped my laptop or I dropped my phone into a lake, fried it, left my laptop in security. And even more embarrassing, I'm not going to lie, that's not the first time I've done that. Flying to New York for the NFL and CBS, I've probably done that 3 times. However, I've always gotten it. I haven't gotten more than 5 steps away without realizing, hey, man, my briefcase is pretty light. I wonder what it's missing. Oh, I know, my computer. But I filled that briefcase up with everything I own because I was going away for 2 weeks and I had to be on a plane for like 14 hours. So it really wasn't as light as I were. Who knows, man? It was stupid. Yogi Roth is my guest. He is in studio. Brother, what's up? How you doing?
Oh, so good. Best summer. Football season's here. I mean, going to training camps and get to hang with you at post-vacation. I mean, this is as good as it gets.
Oh, man, I'm laughing because you are always awesome. It's always good, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And I know college football is right around the corner, and that when I sit down with you, we're going to have this kind of energy, but we're at August 12th. We're 12 days right now from Miami taking on Florida in Orlando. Arizona's going to go up against Hawaii right here on CBS Sports Network. Knowing that we're this close, Yogi, you know where I'm going with this. My one question, how great is ball?
It's the best. You know, you think about like our job is, I think, to seek and uncover humanity in sports, and specifically right around now, at least for me, college football, you do everything and you dive into. I was just in Tucson talking to Khalil Tate. You referenced the game that's on your network. Coach Rolovich out at Hawaii and what he's doing with that program with the old school run and shoot, Mouse Davis. I mean, when you really peel back the layers of who's going to the CFP, which is BS right now, and it arguably could be BS however you want to look at it as the thing goes on, there's humans, you know? And I think now, at least kids, and I was just talking to a couple of programs in the Pac-12 about branding, and everybody's about their brand, and I think we forget even as fans in football that the helmet comes off, and there's humans and there's stories there and kids that love the craft. And training camp is when you really get to talk to them about that because everybody's undefeated and in a pretty good mood.
All right, so the helmets come off and we talk about what's inside of guys. You and I were talking during the break, but I want to jump to it right now. You're big right now on EQ. EQ. What is so interesting to you about EQ? What is it and what interests you about it?
Yeah, so emotional intelligence. You know, I mean, I think we've always spent time as athletes growing up, you know, with your family, you know, you yourself, me, myself. It was all about like straining. You know, can you wake up earlier? Can you stay later? Coach says 3 sets of 10. You do 3 sets of 12. Like, you run not 40-yard sprints, but 60-yard sprints. Like, we always do more physically. And we all admit and accept that the mind and the brain and our mindset and our psyche plays such a big role in performance. But we don't train it, right? We don't pay for a gym membership to train our mind. Very rarely. So this year, myself and our staff, Trent Dilfer and company at the Elite 11, we leaned into emotional intelligence for a huge reason. One is I think the emotions that college athletes go through now are dramatic. They come in as huge recruits. They very rarely live up to that hype when it is dramatically large. And they come out relatively depressed. They either aren't a big draft pick, aren't drafted at all, and clearly didn't live up to huge expectations. So we said, let's talk about it. Fundamentally, EQ, emotional intelligence, is the capacity to deal with your emotions and to be able to communicate with people with those emotions. And when you talk to guys about it, you got to be able to self-regulate, self-assess, be empathetic, all things that I think it's really hard for athletes now, because it's all about what can I project? What can I put in my IG? What's going to get me double taps, likes, RTs, etc.? And you forget that you're human. And then all of a sudden, you're in a really dark place. So we did it. We tried it with the Elite 11 kids this summer, and all we taught them was emotional intelligence. And it was awesome. They finally had fun. They tapped in their imagination. I call it the wonder switch. We turned that back on for a lot of them. And they started to embrace the joy around the craft. And I think that's what EQ does, when you can be aware of what's going on in your own brain and how to communicate it with others.
Yogi Roth is joining me in studio. All right, so as part of this summer also, you went through something life-changing, which I'm going to get to in a little while, but you did have a stop in Utah. They're the preseason favorite to win the Pac-12. What did you make of what you saw in Utah?
Yeah, I was there in the spring, called their spring game on the Pac-12 networks. And, you know, spring is cool because you're there for real practice. And I was like, whoa, I haven't seen a team practice like this in a long time. Last time I saw a team practice like this, I was on the staff, the Trojans, back in the day. I was like, okay, that was spring. Let me get there in camp. Came to a real practice and training camp. Same exact thing. Because usually in the season, you see a Friday walkthrough. It's not much, right? They are as real of a team as I've seen in a really long time. And I comp them.
What do you mean by that?
They look the part to Alabama size-wise. They looked the part to Clemson speed-wise. They looked the part to Ohio State when you look at the secondary-wise. I mean, everyone across the board on defense reminds me of SC back in 05, where everyone who started at some point made it to the league. Some were undrafted free agents. Some were first-round picks. When I look at this defense, Bradley and I, Lecky Foto on the defensive front, they're real dudes that came back for their senior year. Jalen Johnson, to me, he's top one or two cornerback on the West Coast. He's going to be one of the best in the country. Safety, Julian Blackman, reminds me of Earl Thomas. Linebackers, they've got dudes that may be unrestricted free agents, maybe fourth, fifth round picks. Devin Lloyd may be a high profile guy because he's only in his second year in the program. Point being, they all look the part. Now, they don't have the depth that those other programs have, but they are real and they're physical, and that's their mindset. And oh, by the way, they return one of the top running backs in the country. Their offensive line, to me, had their way at times with that defensive front in practice, which is really impressive. Quarterback's a four-year starter. They're good enough at wide receiver. He had eight deep. So they've got the tools and a head coach, longest tenured guy on the West Coast in Kyle Whittingham, to make a real run at this thing in terms of the college football playoff and impressing that 13-member committee.
All right, so this is the reason why they're the team to beat in the Pac-12. Now, when you look at things locally, Yogi, let's shift to that for a minute. To the dismay of some Trojan fans, Clay Helton is back. What is the biggest key for USC coming into this season?
Yeah, I think there's really two things. And I was just there 2 days ago. I'm going to go back again tomorrow. Can't wait to get around that team. It's not ability. You know, I think when we look at the players, they have them. Now, I think there's a myth out there that's they've got the best players in the pack or the best players in the country. I think when you go position group by position group, that's not true. They got the best receiving core, but I would take Justin Herbert and KJ Costello right now over their quarterback room. I think that's fair when you go around different groups. They need to develop a corner. But the biggest things are, one, resiliency. When they were on the road last year and got down, they never came back one time. So when things get bad, can you bounce back? I call it pace, plays after critical errors. Do you have that quality? Second thing, which is going to sound silly, it's excitement. And that's what Graham Harrell and the six new assistants brought to this staff. They had to remind guys, hey, bro, you're at USC. Like, let me tell you what everybody around the country thinks about when they see the interlock, USC, and what the Trojans are about. You saw that in spring. I saw it in practice. And I think in college football, energy can really garner a couple wins. I think it's that important, that critical, especially around the EQ that we reference of that age group. And I think you're seeing guys in that program, and I think they'll have the most fun they've ever had playing, because they were those high-profile recruits that it went from a joy when they were 10, 12, 14 years old to a craft and a job 16, 17, 18 offered all these scholars. And I think, to me, it sounds crazy, But they'll be the sleeper in the Pac-12, and they'll take a real run at the South in my eyes.
Yogi Roth joining me in studio. All right, what about Crosstown? What is a reasonable expectation for UCLA in year number two under Chip Kelly?
Yeah, I was just there yesterday with the program, and they remind me of Utah a couple years ago. They don't have anybody right now that I look and say, first-round draft pick. And I don't know if anybody there would say that. Darnay Holmes potentially at corner. He's a real dude. But they have a lot of players that you look at as a really good football player. You know, they started 19 true freshmen last year. They have 87 freshmen and sophomores. 41 true freshmen on the roster right now, today. And they're a really young team. But they're really solid across the board. Dorian Thompson-Robinson's going to come back as their quarterback. They got depth at receiver. They got one of the top 10 rushers statistically in the country, and Joshua Kelly coming back, let alone one of the best stories in recent years, coming from UC Davis, walking on, getting a Scholarly, being a top 10 rusher in the country, almost three Bills against the Trojans a year ago in the upset win. And then on the defensive side, they're really solid. You got three true freshmen that played D-tackle last year. They're sophomores now. You know, Tyler Manoa, Antonio Maffi went from 411 pounds to 351. I mean, think about that in terms of his movement. So I call it circle games. When I look at every one of their games, other than potentially Oklahoma, it's a circle game. Maybe Utah. They can win. It could go either way. So it'll all be about, for them, unforced errors, not doing things that hurt themselves, and staying in games and allowing Chip Kelly's prowess as a play caller to just set in when they need to. And I just kind of believe in that. So I think they're a bowl team this year.
You're covering so much ground. Yogi Roth is joining me in studio. Now, you mentioned Justin Herbert coming back at quarterback with Oregon, Mario Cristobal coming in. Once again, they're coming off a 9-win season. That was his first year as head coach there. They're going to open up against Auburn in Arlington, Texas. How important is that game, not just for the Ducks, but for the Pac-12 as a conference?
It's huge. I mean, I don't think it's as big as UW Auburn a year ago. And I hope that people that have a voice, like the people on the committee, or, you know, I know you don't do this, but other people that have platforms, you don't bury a whole conference based on one game, especially when it was competitive like it was a year ago. But I think for them, what they have is they've got the sexiness of Justin Herbert. He is everything. He is as impressive as a guy as I've been around. He has what I call the Marcus impact, in terms of he's not about himself, not about his brand. He's about his team. And that makes him and his brand even hotter, right? And, oh, by the way,
funny how that works,
he's a dude, right? Exactly. You don't ask for it, and it always comes. So I love everything about him. But I also love their offensive line. 153 combined starts returned. Penei Sewell, listeners, remember the name. He'll be a top 10 draft pick at left tackle. Two running backs that are on the Doak Walker preseason award list. Real dudes. Five true freshmen come in at wide receiver that elevate the program immediately. They had 52 drops a year ago. So everybody wants to take shots at Herbert and his completion percentage. 52 drops, dramatic amount. And then they bring in Juwan Johnson, a transfer from Penn State at wide receiver. And defensively, which is the sneaky part of this team, Andy Avalos comes from Boise State, new defensive coordinator, and Auburn's going to play a first-year quarterback. Might be Bo Nix, true freshman, Joey Gatewood, redshirt freshman. Stage is big for them, too. And I think a lot of times on the West Coast, you hear, like, SC's got a tough stretch. Oregon's got Auburn. Well, they got to play them, too. You know, there's two sides of that, so I don't know if they'll win. I think it'll be a really competitive game, but I love the physicality. I love what Mario Cristobal brings to the game, and I love their campaign in terms of Herbert once a month has a huge stage. I think he's got the best opportunity to win the Heisman for a West Coast kid in a long time because of that.
We're talking to Yogi Roth. Now, you and I talked about EQ. Let me ask you about CTC. All right, that's one of the things that comes up at the Elite 11 quite a bit. CTC, control the controllables. It seems kind of self-evident, but what does that mean, and how important is that when you evaluate a quarterback?
Well, I think it's everything, you know, and I'll never forget it. So we had a quarterback, and I'll tell a story about him. His name's Bryce Young. He's going to USC. He's here in Southern California. He's gifted. He'll remind you, I was comparing him to like Steph Curry at point guard, you know, if he was playing, when he plays the quarterback position. One of the top guys in the country. He was my pre-Elite 11 number one guy. And the way we did it this year with EQ at the Elite 11, you'll see it on the NFL Network the next couple weeks, the doc series will release, is we had guys vote for themselves and vote on each other. So usually the staff comes back and says, who's 1 through 11? We said, this year, let's flip it. Let's teach these guys the tools, the emotional intelligence, give them the tools to make real peer reviews. We even brought in the Navy SEALs to teach them how to peer review each other and just be truth tellers. Guys were great at it. And within his peer group, he also had quarterback commit in Notre Dame, Drew Pine, and also had C.J. Stroud, who ends up winning the MVP. C.J. just had one of those weeks. So Bryce, for the number one guy, going to SC, everybody had huge expectations. It's hard, right, when you're supposed to be the dude. But he thrived in our setting. Thrived because we taught him around controlling the controllables, etc. Well, the minute the rankings come out and the minute the players vote on who the top guys are and he opens up his phone, it's a challenge because what's coming at you? all the negative juice, all the negative energy, all the naysayers. What's going on? Did you get screwed? Whatever it is.
What does EQ say about that? Does it say don't look at that? Does it say look at it, take it all in, and this is how you react to it? What do you do with that?
It says assess it, regulate it, and have the capacity to deal with it. And that's exactly what he did. And when I can remember our final meeting, we said to the guys around CTC and control the controllables, Trent said it, it's a great quote that I'm going to steal. He said, don't be a prisoner of the moment, but be a product of the process. And we saw it with this young man, in Bryce Young. It was just that light bulb of like, whoa, yeah, because that's going to happen to me in college. Don't be a prisoner of the moment when I throw a bad pick or when I'm pissed if I'm benched, if I'm Tate Martell today and not named the starter at Miami that just happened a few minutes ago. Don't be a prisoner of the moment. Be a product of your entire process because you're 18, and that's not a long life, but it's not 5 minutes when a decision was made. And to watch that happen with that type of kid who is a brilliant young man, I was like, yeah, man, this CTC thing is real, and I can't wait for these guys to just get – we just expose them a little bit to it, but then it's on their programs to really make that thing flourish, and I think most college programs try to do that.
Yogi Roth is joining me. I've got something I have to ask you. I have to ask you. How great is Bali? How great is Bali? Over the summer, you and Amy got married in Bali. To borrow that phrase, how great is Bali? Tell me about that, man. How great was Bali?
It was magic, you know? You travel. You got back from a trip, as you referenced, in Croatia, traveling around with your family. And for us to go to the spiritual capital of the world, you know, it's known as the healthiest, the place for just pure healing. You know, Indonesia has 17,000 islands. Bali is one of 17,000, and it's the only Hindu island. So whether it was Hindu or Christian or Jewish, like it's one of 17,000. It's already unique in and of itself. And have our family there, our little guy Zane with us. Like it was so special to experience the moment when we all said, I do. Everybody got a ring, you know, her, myself, little man. But we also got to celebrate other people's wedding engagements, other people's birthdays, other people's anniversaries. It was really, you know, about our community. And that's what Bali is. You know, they truly, and in the Hindu culture and the Hindu religion, they believe in karma. And I believe in karma. And everything about that place is about that. You know, they put out a little thing every day. You'll love it. My mom fell in love with it. It's an offering. And it's a little banana leaf. And they put a flower in it. They put incense in it and a piece of food. It could be a cracker if that's all you have. It could be a piece of chicken. It could be a fruit. And they put it out 3 times a day on the doorstep. And it's just an offering out to the universe. Like, hey, I want to give you something. You know, I may not have a lot. I might just have a cracker. I might just have a morsel. I might just have a crumb. But I believe that if I give it away, it all comes back. And everyone I've been around, you, Coach Carroll, any of my mentors, they've all been about give everything away. And I think when I get asked by kids, give me a key to life, give it all away. And Bali was another reminder of that. And to marry the love of my life there and to celebrate it with the hashtag, how great is Bali, it didn't get much better.
That is so good. Now, you and Amy, how did the two of you meet? Is there a college football angle in this somehow?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, we didn't throw flowers at our wedding. She actually threw a football. We met because
she threw a pretty good ball?
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's an athlete. She can rip. She's better than a lot of 13 quarterbacks that I've seen around the country.
Great.
But yeah, I was at San Jose State and Stanford. And Mike Bloomgren, he's now the head coach at Rice, and Brent Brennan's head coach at San Jose State, they're like, hey, stick around an extra day. So I end up just changing my travel schedule and stick around the campuses. I'm hanging out, talking ball. And I go to the airport and just kind of living my life. It's spring football. It's March 23rd, exactly, a couple years ago. And I walk on, and you know how it is. You walk down the aisle at a plane, and you kind of assess where you're sitting. And I see this smile pop up, and I'm like, I'm within one or two seats of that, or one or two rows.
I hope I am.
Yeah, I hope I am. And it happened to me exactly that. And I sat there, and my jaw was kind of on the floor because I was like, oh, yeah, like it's on. And I sat in the middle seat. She had her headset in reading Fast Company. I'll never forget it. Huh. And I tapped her on the shoulder. I was like, how you doing? She pulled out one ear bit. She's like, good. Put it right back in. Tapped her again. I was like, you heading home? She goes, yeah, put it back in. Guy next to me is clowning me, laughing. And I was like, bro, I'm boxing you out.
That's a big swing, by the way,
totally,
man.
And I was like, I got to go again.
Headphones in. I mean, dude, that's a pretty obvious message, right?
Yeah, clearly. And I was like, I got to go
interested,
again.
Not interested, bro.
Yeah. And I went with my only ace in the hole. And I got to thank my parents is my name. So I was like, hey, my name's Yogi. What's yours? And she's like, Yogi? Both earbuds came out. And she's like, how'd you get that name? And then She didn't breathe for 45 minutes. It took me a few months to get a date, but greatest thing clearly that ever happened to me in my life.
Yeah, dude, what if your name was like, I don't know, Adam?
Yeah, she would have been like, cool, I'm Amy. Later.
Incredible. We're talking to Yogi Roth. I've got a couple of more moments with him. Let me find, it's such a good story. It's really good. As I mentioned, Arizona's going to open up against Hawaii. It's going to sound like a shill because that's what it is. But I love the matchup. Arizona against Hawaii, CBS Sports Network. I love the programs. I love the coaches. What do you expect to see from the Wildcats in year number two under Kevin Sumlin?
It'd be a totally different team. I fundamentally and firmly believe, and I bet you would say this with all the programs, TV shows, radio shows you've done, it takes about 18 months to establish culture. And that's where they are. Or he came in post-signing day in the first year of the early signing period. So his first class wasn't even his guys. So to build the trust, but even more importantly, just get to know guys. In recruiting, you're doing these home visits. Like, you get to know personalities. Off-season workouts, you get to know guys. It took him a year to do it. Khalil clearly got injured. There was issues there with their offense. What should they be? What shouldn't they be? They lost some dramatic games, like a Houston game midday, hot as all get out in Houston on the road. And now they put it behind them. And I really believe this for him. Remember, he was competing with Caleb Wilson, who Mr. Irrelevant, for the starting quarterback job in high school. He was never a dude until heading into last year when he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So he had to deal with that. Talk about capacity, emotional intelligence. He had to deal with all of that. And now, I was just there a couple days ago, he's primed. He is primed. This defense is veteran-laden. You know, they got Colin Schooler back. He was the freshman defensive player of the year at linebacker. They got two defensive linemen that I think are big-time all Pac-12 caliber players. Receivers, they're young. Depth at running back and J.J. Taylor, one of the other four top 10 rushers who return in the Pac-12 conference this year in the country statistically. So they'll move the ball, and he'll scare – I think he scares defensive coordinators more than Tua, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, because he's accurate, and he's a freaky tailback when the ball's in his hands. So I'd expect him to tuck it and run it probably a little bit more than he did a year ago, and I think we're going to have a great game in Hawaii. And the conference needs that game almost as much as you could argue – Auburn, because everybody's watching, because we're all starving for college football.
Agreed. Last thought. I'm already running heavy, but you talk about this type of thing on your podcast. If it takes 18 months to change the culture of a program or an organization, if you want to reinvent yourself, the individual, and you want to change your personal culture or your ethos, how long should that take?
I call it the lonely work. You know, it's however long you really want to get real. You know, if you can only do an hour a day, maybe it's going to take you a couple months, but I've always felt that the number one job of all of us is just to get to the truth. And there's a big difference between disagreement and dislike. So when you're around mentors, around your tribe, like, what's my truth? And you could look in the mirror and be like, well, what am I wearing? You know, everybody has a philosophy they live by every day. But sometimes, you know, old Lou Tice, if you remember that guy, he was a motivational guy back in the day. He was Coach Carroll's guy. He used to say you can develop a scotoma. And a scotoma would be if I walked in here and there was papers everywhere, the first couple of days, maybe it's awkward. But if I don't touch them, then I just get used to the place being a mess. And then my life becomes a mess and it starts to reflect all over me. So I think that's the biggest thing. If you want to change, you got to ask yourself hard questions. What's my style, my vision, the theme, my philosophy of my life, and go to work on it. And then just keep diving in and leaning in. And I think that's the most fun that you could possibly have. I mean, we could work on each other all day, but to sharpen our own sword and to live on our own razor's edge, that's where the best performers operate, in my opinion, because then you're not performing with fear. You know, you've interviewed a lot of guys, and I'm always skeptical when I hear I was driven by the fear of failure. Okay. I was that way too. It takes up a lot of brain space. You know, I'm driven by how long can I stay in the razor's edge? How can I continue to compete to be my best self? And then you're like, all right, let's cut it loose, bro. Let's roll. And you're not worried about, I just screwed up the last sentence. I mispronounced the last name. You know, Colin, you do live shows. I do live games every Saturday with Ted Robinson on the Pac-12. You can't.
No, but you got to go.
Yeah, you got to. It's a process, though, to get yourself there. And I'm always working at it. You always are. And that's the joy.
Hey, check this out. We all say, do not judge a book by its cover. But we also know that's exactly what most people do. Appearance can be everything, especially in a professional situation. This is why I want to talk to you about that bag over your shoulder. Are you still carrying that old college backpack to work or around town? It's a bad look if so. It's time to grow up, look the part, get yourself a Daniels briefcase. Daniels is a New York City-based men's leather briefcase brand that is making boys look like men, one bag at a time. The best part, you can afford this bag before you land the big job. That's the key. How is that? They cut out the middlemen. They sell directly to you. Daniels, therefore, is able to offer a high-quality, luxury leather briefcase at an incredibly reasonable price of $195. You compare that to luxury brand names with starting prices closer to $500. This is the kind of briefcase you want to rock when you walk into an office. The leather is high quality. And if you have to transition from workday to date night, it's perfect for that too. This week, you can get $25 off your Daniels briefcase at DanielsNYC.com. DanielsNYC.com. Just make sure you use the promo code ROME at checkout. That's $25 off one of their leather briefcases. Plus, they offer free shipping. Again, go to DanielsNYC.com, use the promo code ROME, and get $25 off a handcrafted, high-quality leather briefcase with free shipping. Ditch that old backpack. Start looking like a pro. DanielsNYC.com. I love their leather briefcases. I know you will too. So just to be nominated was an amazing thing, especially to be nominated with so many other incredibly talented people. So on August 4th, when I was on vacation, it was announced that I was part of a 9-person class being officially inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame in November. And again, I want to be very clear about this. Number one, I am extremely gratified, extremely thankful for the honor itself. It's a pretty cool thing. And I'd be lying if I said otherwise. It's a pretty cool thing. And I'm not going to be one of those guys that said, yeah, you know, it's not really important to me. It kind of is. You know, you want to be recognized for your hard work, and you certainly want to be recognized by your peers. So it's a really neat thing. Now, I was hesitant to get into it today because it did feel really self-serving. Like, I don't want to roll back after 2 weeks and crack open the mic and not talk sports and make it about me. But here's the thing. It really is not about me. I bring it up because it's not about me. It's about us. It's about the jungle, the thing that we've been doing together for nearly 3 decades. Like, none of that matters. None of that works without an audience. I mean, yes, I pride myself on my process and my approach and my work and the grind, and that I show up every single day and I don't mail it in. And whereas I don't give you a great show every single day, that's the goal. And I take pride in that. However, none of it matters without an audience. None of it matters without what I've said before, and I'll say again right now, the most loyal audience in this business. So I said last year when I was nominated that if I go in, we go in. And those are not empty words. I mean, I really mean that. We go in. I had a buddy of mine, I don't want to say who it was, a former major leaguer. He said the best thing. He's like, bro, me and another former major leaguer, dude, we were going to crash the event and just show up for you. I'm like, bro, this is not Cooperstown. You can't. It's not what that is. And he's like, I don't know, man. I mean it. We were. I'm just fired up for you. So last year when my category was decided by a listener vote, you all went so hard for me. You all went to bat for me. And I never forgot that. Now, this year was different. This year it was not by listener vote. My category was different. It was voted on by my industry colleagues. So you didn't get a chance to flex. But I know that you would have done it again if you had to. I know you would have done anything you could to try to get me in. And I never forgot that. And I never will. So clones, I have something for you. I've got something for you. And I'll get to that in just 1 minute. What I do want to do is make sure I acknowledge the rest of the 2019 Hall of Fame class. Enormous congratulations going out to Hollywood Hamilton, Harry Harrison, Joe Madison, Dr. Ruth. Dr. Ruth is awesome. Ryan Seacrest, he's an empire unto himself. John Tesh. And I am really pumped about this. Really excited about this. Really excited to go in with a couple of good friends and legends of the industry. Absolute icons here in Los Angeles, Kevin and Bean. I mean, it really already cool to go into the Hall of Fame, but to go in with Kevin and Bean, a couple of guys who I've got enormous respect for, affection for, guys who've owned the LA airwaves in the morning for decades. Man, that is so great. I cannot wait to see those guys in New York in November. And also, quick shout out to all the people who sat in the chair the last couple of weeks. JT the Brick hosted the show. The Sklar's killed it, as always. Kyle Brandt came back in. Bill Ryder, Brian Weber, excellent job all the way around. Appreciate all of that. I appreciate the Hall of Fame love that came in the second week while I was on vacation. So going back to what I said a moment ago, you clones have always been here for me. I don't have that moment without you. So this is just a really small, small, small token of my appreciation. I hope you know how I feel about you. That aside, a small token. As I mentioned, what I have for you is this. And trust me when I tell you, I saw all the tweets asking if I was going to make good on the 7 stipulations that I pulled from the Box of Chaos last year. Remember? I said, if you clones vote me in, we will go into the Box of Chaos. And I will pull 7 things that you all wanted me to do on the show that I said that I would never do on the show. If you get me in. It didn't happen. So the Box of Chaos went back on the shelf. However, while I am not going to reprise the Box of Chaos, this occasion should not go without some clone love. Mark your calendars. This Friday, August 16th, we will do 1 segment and 1 segment only. 1 segment, not the whole show. I'll give you a fat segment. 1 segment, I give to you the right to self-gloss. August 16th, self-gloss Friday. I know you want it. I am a man of the people, so I'm going to give it to you for a single segment. 1 segment, which will be named later after we book out the guests. I can't say which segment it's going to be. Now, I have allowed self-glossing on special occasions before. It has produced some pretty memorable moments, like Mikey De La Creme, Slash in Brentwood, who, of course, will ever forget the Crystal Methodist.
Houston, hello. Hi, who's this?
Hey, this is the Crystal Methodist.
Crystal Methodist. I like that. Where'd that come from?
Well, I used to sling meth in the parking lots of Methodist churches, and I found they were the best customers.
Crystal Methodist. That's what you get when you allow a day of self-glossing. So Friday, as a thank you to you clones, tip of the hat, I will lift the ban on self-glossing, but for 1 segment only. That means you've got 4 days to come up with something that you want to self-gloss as. So when you get on the air, be prepared to explain your gloss. If you have a take to go along with it, that wouldn't be so bad either. Make it worth everybody's time. Do not waste this chip, this opportunity. Don't make me regret throwing you that bone. That's coming up on Friday, all right? So I am once again very, very pumped to be in the Hall of Famer. I know you're happy for me, and I really appreciate that so much. Let's celebrate together with a self-gloss Friday at the end of the week. 1 segment, 1 time, make it count. And again, thank you very much for all the love and the support and your loyalty. Because again, it may sound cheesy to you, but I mean this from my heart. It's not my induction. It is our induction. We all going together.
We did it.
He is the head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. He led Vanderbilt to a 2nd College World Series title this season. He is a 2-time National Coach of the Year. He is a 3-time SEC Coach of the Year. He was selected for induction into the American Baseball Coaches Association Hall of Fame class of 2020. Vanderbilt won the SEC regular season title and the tournament title, and they set the league record for wins and tied the record for draft picks. What I'm saying is they had an amazing year, 59-12. And I said, if you are ever in Southern California, Tim Corbin, you've got to come in studio. And he did just that. Tim, it is so good to see you in person. How are you?
Great. Great studio. I love this.
Not too bad, right?
No, it's nice. The pictures, you can take those pictures down to me, though. That's tough to watch. It's tough to see.
Come on, man. They got to look at me all day for 3 hours. Yeah. This is good. You're upgrading my real estate. All right, so you and I spoke shortly after you won the national title in June. What has life been like since that win, and what have you been up to?
Pretty busy, actually. I mean, don't really have too much time to decompress this time of year because it's recruiting time. And we got into camp a couple weeks right after we played, a couple days. And then after that, I mentioned went up to Cape Cod and saw our kids play up in the Cape Cod League. And then past couple of weeks, been recruiting. Been down here or across here in Orange County area, Long Beach, watching the area code games. And that's always been a lot of fun. Done that for 25 years. So it's good to kind of recapture this area and get back here and see some of the kids we signed.
All right, so what are you looking for down here? What are the area code games all about?
Area code games are made up of teams from all different area codes around the country. So you have Midwest kids, you have West Coast kids, East Coast kids, and they split them up. And the major league organizations put a uniform on them, whether it's Yankees or Brewers or Rangers and Nationals, and just a lot of teams that play against one another. And they play about 4 or 5 games a day for about 10, 12 days. So that's what we've been watching.
Yeah, it's really interesting because my kids both played club ball out here, and I've got one son going to Wisconsin this fall. My younger son starts high school. He's still playing club ball and high school baseball. Tim, it's amazing to me how different baseball is even from here to 10 miles down the road, and how different it is and the way they approach it. What's your general take on Southern California baseball? What are the kids like out here and the way they play?
Well, they're very good. I mean, they play a lot, so they're more savvy to the game. Weather's excellent. A little bit different than the Northeast kids. But I think that's what makes these games unique, is because you get a lot of Northeast kids mixed in with the Orange County kids and kids from all over, so you kind of see the style of play. But I would say, more than anything, the kids from California are groomed in the game and pretty savvy and have a different feel about how to play the game.
Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin is joining me in studio. Now, in terms of your team, there's this great story about the moment when you knew this year's team could be really special. And that moment did not take place on the field. Mm-hmm. It didn't take place in the weight room. It was around Christmas when you received a report on the team's academic performance in the fall semester. What was the report like, and where did that let you know about this team and how good it might be?
Well, Maggie and I go up to Boston to celebrate the holidays, and right about the time we go, it's kind of just before Christmas, I always receive the grades. And you know, when you're a coach, you got your eyes on that, because it's obviously the performance and eligibility of your kids, which Vanderbilt's never an issue, but at the same time, you want to make sure that your kids are doing well. So when I got that report, opened it up, and it was stellar. It was over a 3.0 team grade point average. But more than the grades itself, it just made me kind of reflect on the fall. And I thought to myself, you know, I didn't get one call regarding the kids in terms of behavior, social behaviors.
Not one.
And that's tough to come by. When you got 35 guys, you know, there's a lot of behaviors that do happen. But they were all positive. And I just think at that time, it made me think, this is a mature group. They're making decisions for the right reasons. And the harmony within the group was good. And I felt like everyone, you feel like you always have some talent. But in order for that talent to come out, they have to be doing the right things. And at that point right there, I thought, okay, you know, I don't know if you're going to win a national championship, but I think we're going to be successful.
You know, it's a different group. And in the sense, not just that it's a group that stays out of trouble and a group that gets good grades. In talking to Kumar Rocker earlier in the tournament run, and then talking to you after it, one of the reoccurring themes was the leadership of the senior class. Now, for those who know the class, they know that this group lost one of their own. In Donnie Everett. He passed away tragically in 2016. First off, let me ask about Donnie. What was he like as a person?
Fun, country kid. He was an only child, Teddy and Susan, parents. I think when you talk about baseball talent, not the kid, he was probably seen as the next great one. His last pitch he threw was 101 miles an hour. It was in the SEC tournament. And what they did in memorial to him is they put the 101 on the video board. And they have that up there every year when we play in the tournament. But in terms of a kid, he was very fun-loving. I mean, that's the vision I have of him, was that very last day when we worked out in the morning before he went fishing. He was just screwing around and having a good time. Jolly, he's about 6'2", 220 pounds, country kid, simple, smart at the same time. But if our guys were anywhere and they were having fun, he was in the middle of it. So he was that kid that had a tremendous sense of humor.
So, Tim, what do you make of the way the class responded to the tragedy, and then that they brought Donnie's parents onto the stage after winning the title this year?
You know, Jim, in 16, I didn't know if we'd ever get off the ground again, to be honest with you. There were many times I go back and talk to my wife and say, I don't know if I can do this, and I don't know if we can keep moving. And it was torturous, you know, in terms of the 16 year, 17 year. But the fact that 7 seniors came back, some of them were drafted, decided to come back and be part of their last season, and have it come full circle was really amazing for a lot of different reasons, because to have a good year is one thing. To have one of those legacy years is another thing. And when we did and we finished it off, the Everetts were a part of it. And, you know, since the, I guess the positive out of losing someone is we gain their parents. Because a lot of times, Jim, when you have kids, you don't really get to know their parents, nor do you want to know their parents. You want to keep it at a distance.
Right.
But Teddy and Susan became almost like staff members now. So everything that we do with the staff, we invite them too. So obviously we went out to Omaha. They came with us, and it was great to bring them on stage to celebrate that.
Tim Corbin is joining us. Tim, you've mentioned Maggie a couple of times, so let me ask you this. A number of years back, your wife Maggie and you had a conversation about the concept of the last game of the year and the fact that for most teams, the last game of the year is going to be a loss in a tournament. It's going to be tough. There's going to be sadness that comes along with that. Her point was, if you're going to focus on the last game, there's a good chance that it's going to be with a lot of sadness. You shifted the focus. What did you shift it to?
I think got away from the scoreboard more than anything else. I mean, I think just simply that it was that more than anything else. She did say that. It was right about the time her oldest was sick, and I think we were going through an emotional time. And she said, if you're just focusing on winning the last game of the year, she goes, you're going to die a very frustrated man. You got to find other ways to get something out of this, which I have, but I didn't really look at it that way. So I think what she did is, like a lot of people in your life, they give you perspective. And she just gave me perspective on what we were doing as a family and how we were sharing these moments with the kids. And we just kind of turned our attention more to that and did some of the small things better than the big things. And then the big things started to happen.
Tim, you want perspective. I mean, you look at the spot you're in right now, but in the grand scheme of things, it was not that long ago that you were coaching a Presbyterian and sleeping in your car on recruiting visits in order to save money. What do you remember about those days?
They're probably tough at the time, but when you look back at them, you see how they provided some type of foundation for you. I think the thing that, you know, I try to do with the kids too is as they proceed through college athletics and as they garner some attention, just retain your innocence. Don't ever lose your innocence, whether you're a major league player or whatever you do. And I think I try to follow that same path. I remember where I came from. I knew what it was like, much like you and your business. And you start off slow and you wonder if you're ever going to get to the place that you think you could get, nor do you have that vision. So I think I've always been a Presbyterian guy. Even at Vanderbilt, I feel like I'm a Presbyterian coach. I value things, and I want our kids to value things too, because that's very important. So I don't see anything around me as being grander than what it is. I try to keep it very simple.
We're talking to Tim Corbin for a few more moments. Now, when you and I spoke after you won the last title, we talked about the fact that Jerry Stackhouse has already been trying to learn from you. He's not the only one. Head football coach Derek Mason has talked about how much he's learned from you in terms of teaching the details of the game. How do those details, whether it's the cleanliness of the dugout, the fact that the notebooks are in the right spot in the classroom, all the little things, how does that show up in success on the field?
I just think that awareness skills of males are things that have to continually be touched upon. I think it's like a vitamin. And we start every day in a classroom before we go to the field. And I spend about 30 or 45 minutes every day talking about concepts. Could be small concepts, could be character traits, it could be anything. But I think when you start to become very protective of your identity and who you are, you start becoming protective of what you have and the people around you. And when guys start to do that, they become interdependent. When they become interdependent, they become very good teammates. And I think it's for them to focus on their awareness level and what's around them and be respectful of the things that they have and the people that are around them, because eventually that teammate type concept, it starts to flow into what they become, whether it's a husband or a parent. They become very protective of that too. So really, I'm just trying to get bunch of kids to reach maturity maybe at a quicker rate than they would if no one broached those subjects.
Now, you mentioned in passing some of the guys that come back to the program. Now that you've won a couple of national championships, when your MLB players come back to train and they show you the love and respect that they have for you in the program, it's got to be something. Like when David Price says, quote, Coach Corbin is a second father to me, what's it like to hear that? What's that mean to you?
Oh, I try not to overstate my importance with them in terms of how they feel about me that way, because I think the thing that I am is I'm a step parent, And when Maggie and I joined, I joined a family, two little girls. And I think that concept has always stayed with me in terms of being a step-parent to two girls. When you learn to love someone else's children, essentially that's what you're doing with other people's children that get an opportunity to play for you. And there's days when you might not like them, but at the same time, the root of why you're there is them, and it's to take care of them. So I've always had that purpose and always had that feeling just to take care of the guys while they're there and try to bring them along both athletically, socially, mentally, in every way with the help of the coaches, obviously, and my wife. And my wife's a big part of what we do, and she comes to practice every day, comes to every game, and just enjoys the, I guess, the lifestyle that we all share with these kids.
And she's got equity, and she's a big part of this. That's got to be great. Listen, I can't stress this enough, but Vanderbilt made the NCAA tournament field three times in the 20th century. All right, I can't stress that enough. Now you're the gold standard, not just in college baseball, but I could argue in college sports. Did you know this was possible when you were first offered that opportunity at Vanderbilt?
Not really. I think, you know, for some, it seemed like it could be a dead-end job. Vanderbilt's a tremendous university. The coach there before me was a wonderful man. He didn't have the resources that we have today, so I feel very fortunate. But in a lot of ways, too, Jim, I feel like we earned it. You know, Eric Bakich at Michigan was our first assistant. Derek Johnson, who's now the pitching coach for the Reds, was our pitching coach at the time. And we just had a great staff, and we just took it upon ourselves to try to do as much as we possibly could in the early years and just start building it. And as we built it, it gained more attention inside the university. They saw it as being a positive program, much like any program that's positive at Vanderbilt. They felt like our baseball program was. So we started gaining more resources. And with that, started gaining a little bit more acclaim. And then kids decided that it was probably a cooler thing to be a part of our program. And then recruiting started to flourish a little bit. And that's where the David Prices and Sonny Grays and Mikey Miners and Alvarezes and so on started to come. And that put us in the situation that we were today. I mentioned that after we won the national championship. It's all connected, you know. It's if we don't get to 204, we don't get to 207, and so on and so on. So all these kids we've had in the past, I congratulate them, and they go, come on, I didn't do anything. Well, yeah, you did. You know, you built a foundation to get us from point A to point B.
Right?
Right. And that's what it was. So that they're all responsible.
Good night now!